Welcome to the Whole Person Center podcast. Our mission is to improve the human condition by providing direct health and wellness services while supporting the development of highly competent professionals. I am Dr. Aurelia Bickler, the director of the Whole Person Center, and it is my pleasure to welcome today's guest, Nia Alafia Middlebrooks.
Nia comes from Middlebrooks Academy. She is the principal there and has so much to offer, so much to tell us about. And I cannot wait to speak to Nia today about generational trauma. Again, I am Dr. Aurelia Bickler. I am the Whole Person Center's director, and it is my honor to be here with you all today. Hi, Nia. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, both from a personal standpoint and also in your professional life.
So I'm the principal of Middlebrooks Academy, and Middlebrooks Academy is a preparatory school for 9th to 12th graders. And we specialize in student athletes who want to play basketball. The special part about Middlebrooks Academy is that we're headed into our 12th year. And so we have had a lot of different types of students, both international and domestic. And over the years, we have listed and written and put together their stories. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of what we'll be talking about today, just how they have dealt with generational trauma and how they've gone forward from it. I'm also the director of a newly launched program, Middlebrooks Mental Health Group. I'm very excited about that because it's really looking at how people's brains develop and making sure that we understand how to handle student athletes in the best possible way. So making sure that we understand learning disabilities, making sure that we understand and help them understand and identify any type of mental disabilities that they may be having and mm-hmm. so forth.
That's beautiful. I love all the incredible work that you're doing. And it's, I feel like we live in a time where we need so much of that wholehearted, loving, supportive, kind, helpful effort, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it means so much to me that you're doing all of that you're doing and that you're sharing about it with us. A little bit about generational trauma. How would you explain it?
Generational trauma to me are traumatic experiences that take place and moved or transition from one generation to the next. Hmm. It's a very big topic, and most people shy away from it because they don't understand it. They don't even know it exists. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is understanding that generational trauma produces stressors, and these stressors have an ability to make us or trigger us into acting certain ways, triggering our families to have cycles of poverty, cycles of, you know, domestic violence, things that we just don't need in our lives, but mm-hmm. are subject to it because of some of the things that our families have had to go through societally.
Yeah. It's so interesting when you say, you know, most people don't even know what it is or that it's happening to them. I have to tell you, and I know we briefly spoke before about this, but like, I feel like I had some of that and never really realized it until much later in my life when it was something I learned about outside of even understanding that it would ever be something that I would feel directly impacted by.
Most people feel that way. I mean, the World Health Organization this year made sure everyone understood that 70% of people are experiencing generational trauma. Mm. 70%. So it makes it a societal issue for everyone.
Wow. Wow. And do you feel like most people leave, like, and you sort of touched on this, but mm-hmm. do people even know that they're impacted by some generational trauma, generally speaking?
No, they don't know that they are suffering from it. I think the biggest thing is that when you live in it every day, it's extremely hard to know that you're in trauma because it's what you're used to. It's what you see as normal. And so it takes outside people to really be able to say, hey, listen, something's happening, and lead them through a thought process of figuring out what it could be and why.
Yeah. How can someone become aware that they're suffering from it?
That's a great question. And we just had this conversation with our kids. The biggest thing is to learn how to be your own medicine. And that simply means you have to be quite aware of what you're feeling and what's happening around you. And one of the things that we're trying to do is make sure our kids are a lot more emotionally intelligent to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't, something's wrong. Something's not working well, or I'm feeling very angry about this or that. That's really half the battle, to be able to get people to understand that when it's not right, it's not right. And you have to speak up and figure out why. So that's the first big piece. The second big piece is making sure that you understand that you need people around you to help hold you accountable to understanding what's going on. A lot of times it should be family, but it's very tough for family members to do that. So you most often have to go outside and find someone who can help, you know, push you through that.
It's interesting you say that, because if they're from the same family, I wonder if they themselves are going through that same generational trauma and therefore can't even see it, you know?
Sometimes, but sometimes they don't react to the same things. Yeah. You know, there's always these variables that enter into the equation that change how one person would, you know, react to a trauma versus the other. You know, there are some families where a member of the family, they go through the same exact thing, but one member of the family ends up on drugs and another member of the family is actually resilient and able to get up and go. Yeah. So it just depends.
Yeah. So interesting. And I, you know, as a trained marriage and family therapist, I often try to think about, like, how does an MFT, you know, work through right. that? And what, you know, what are some ways that family therapy impacts or addresses this generational trauma, which is a whole other thing that we could talk about at a different time as well. But what in your experience, and I know you work with a lot of kids, and many of them have, you know, experienced generational trauma or continue to experience it and suffer from it. What are the symptoms that you tend to see, and how do we address these symptoms?
So the biggest thing is anxiety. That's really at the forefront. And, you know, it comes on and is triggered by many different things. I had a student athlete recently who, you know, went home, had a conversation with his mom, went to sleep, ended up having dreams that weren't really dreams. They were memories of, you know, traumatic experiences that had happened before. He woke up, he saw that, he came to school the next morning, and that was it. And so we had to walk him through that whole scenario to figure it out. So anxiety is really one of the biggest things. Depression is another one. You know, you see it in there. Another big thing is watching to see whether or not they're addicted to substance abuse. Because most often people don't have the words to tell you what exactly is happening. And they don't want to discuss it because it's very scary. So what they'll do is smoke and drink. And a lot of times just through those efforts, they're dulling themselves. And so they don't necessarily even think about it because they feel good at that moment. But I have a you know, student athletes who always tell me when that goes away, then I'm, you know, faced with it again. So what do I do? So those are some of the things that we see right away.
Yeah. Do you tend to bring families into these situations, or?
That is a great question. It can be very sticky to do that for a couple of reasons. Number one, every culture faces trauma differently. For many cultures, talking about trauma is a sign of weakness. Yes. So instead of talking about it, they'll tell their kids, toughen up, you'll be fine. And it leads to them really not being able to understand what's going on. There's a lot of shutdown on questions that should be able to be answered. You know, how about this? What happened here with grandma? What happened with this person? How come this person is different than this person? There's a lot of things that happen. And when a student comes to you and starts asking those questions, we need to be able to be responsible adults and answer them. Typically, though, we're taught to sweep it under the rug because we're embarrassed by what it is that either we've gone through or generations before. And unfortunately, that doesn't lead the student athletes to be healed, doesn't lead anybody to be healed.
Yeah, Yeah, that's a great point. So do you happen to have resources for people to address and to explore ways to, you know, work through generational trauma? But also even before that, I'm wondering if you have resources to share with our listeners about even identifying that we have these traumas, that we carry these on.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Let me go back to your point, though, about, you know, what they can do. And I'm going to give you broad strokes on this, because, like I said, everyone's a bit different on how they want to approach it. But the biggest thing, and I think this especially for students, you know, young people, and definitely for adults, you have to be able to connect with other people who have gone through it, and they're everywhere. And sometimes we are just not clear about how to approach those conversations. But the more that we work with our students, we start to understand that they honestly help each other. Mm-hmm. They can start to recognize in an instant now why someone's feeling the way they are. They'll come to me and mm-hmm. say, hey, this person is looking like they have some anxiety today. So they take care of each other. And I think that is the biggest thing that we can do for each other, is make sure that we're connecting with other people, making sure that, you know, we allow deeper bonds to be developed on those levels, and understand that those bonds can definitely be for life. You know, yeah. When you're sharing with someone, you know, about something that happened to you, there's a bond that just automatically takes place. And mm-hmm. if you nurture it, it can help. So definitely that. Support groups are great. And that's one of the things that I think is amazing. And we've seen it work a lot for our parents and for our student athletes, connecting, like I said, with each other, but having a place to connect, being able to go back and, you know, look at their notes and call each other on the phone and just really be there. So that's a big one. The toughest part to this is, you know, understanding that therapy works. A lot of cultures still don't believe in it. And yeah. It's very difficult to have those conversations. They still believe that therapy is let me lie on the couch. Mm-hmm. And someone talks to me, and it's become so much more interactive and so much more helpful. For instance, cognitive behavior therapy, as we all know, really does help with the reformation of habits. And that's something that everybody needs. So I think it's also having conversations about what that looks like and the different types of therapy that one can use. Mm-hmm. In the event that someone does not want to do that, one thing that I've seen recently that majorly helps, and is something that I do as well, is life coach. Because there you have an accountability partner. You have someone who is watching to see what the dynamics are. And they specialize in being able to not just bring you through that day by day with measurable objectives, but they're also able to speak to family members one-on-one versus bringing everybody together in a more intervention outlook. And it helps. It's helped a lot. You know, we have a student who I've been life coaching for quite a while, and he was diagnosed with ADHD and mild bipolar disorder, but no one would get him to the doctor 100% to figure it out because they didn't have any clues as to what was wrong. Well, you know, he's gone through many types of generational trauma. And so even getting those diagnoses to become, you know, better can put you in a place to be able to really treat some of the things that are happening with you. So I just think that, you know, all those things are completely important and really overlooked.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because everything that you just mentioned as ways to address it go back to people. Yes. Community and people. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing more meaningful to me as a human being to think of the importance of than to think of the importance of community. Like the idea mm-hmm. that when somebody is there to accompany you, when somebody is there to validate you, to see you, and you know you're not alone, you can really face almost anything.
I agree with you. And I think the bigger conversation out of this is, are we becoming better versions of ourselves to be able to do that from a community perspective? Mm-hmm. Because we live in a time where it's very easy not to care about someone else.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
You know, there are tons of homeless people that exist all over. And the biggest thing that, you know, we know how to do is complain about it. Mm-hmm. But we forget really quick that one day that could be us. It takes one time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. We live in a very judgmental time where people just love to think that, you know, I can do better. I am not that person. I'm not in that situation. But the reality is, like, we are all so much more vulnerable than we even allow ourselves to acknowledge sometimes. But again, that sense of community, right? That homeless person might be able to get out of it with the ability with the support of other people, whether it is one single person that sees them and pays attention to them and helps them and supports them more, whether it's an entire community that does that. The power of humans is really unmatched, right? It's
right.
It's just a beautiful thing. So going back to resources, what I hear is, you know, therapy, I hear life coach, I hear a sense of community. Right. Are there other things? Let's say somebody is listening right now and thinking, whoa, my grandparents talked about going through something. I wonder if I carry some of that in me. Where might that person turn to? What resources are available?
So one of the biggest things, and you know, it's a resource, but it's also right in front of you. Your biggest resource is your family, because you have to be able to approach and get information. Nothing can change until you know the historical things that have happened, because then when you're going to get the help, you're able to articulate a little bit more about, you know, my grandparents went through this. They went through this war. They were mm-hmm. refugees, and it can help set up who you're talking to and what you need. So I just sincerely believe that historical content, not just culturally, but through your family and being able to speak to, you know, the elders, the older folks about what's going on is your key resource.
So let me ask you a question about that, because I am the grandchild of Holocaust survivors.
Yes.
And I never got to meet them. They passed away before I was born, but my mom never knew what her parents went through because they were so traumatized. They would never speak about it. It was not even mm-hmm. a possibility for her to speak to them. And in fact, some of the survivors that now are gone, but were alive throughout my life, they refused to speak about any of it. So I'm thinking about cases like these, mm-hmm. or maybe even cases where somebody doesn't know or doesn't have any living family members that could help them, or maybe their family is not supportive. You know, how might they go about seeking support?
I think the biggest thing is, if you know you're a survivor, then find other grandchildren mm-hmm. of survivors who mm-hmm. you can talk to. Because even if you can't, if you don't have all your historical data, you can definitely have cultural historical data. And then you can infer from that. I mean, for instance, you know, I have a student athlete who just mentioned that their great grandmother was, you know, the end product of, you know, slavery. And yeah. so he got the opportunity to ask her certain questions, right. And she couldn't remember everything, but there was enough historical data culturally yeah. to be able to go, okay, well, I know, you know, in the South, they had to do this. I know in the North, they had to do this. Mm-hmm. And so it gave them a lot of information to go by. And I think you have to do that. You have to put together pieces of the puzzle, because in order for you to move forward, you have to have information. That information is freeing. It sets you free because you're able to go, okay, so I have a picture. You know, even if it's not 100% the exact thing, you take that picture, and now you can walk into your therapy sessions or your life coaching sessions, and they can help you filter the rest.
So I think the moral of the story, or the main lesson to get from this, is the idea that people and knowledge really are the source of freedom.
That's everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Because without it, you cannot speak intelligently to your own children about what you may have gone through. You know, this is also the era of, what is it, ancestry.com and what have you. So being, it's a lot of people, especially in my culture, you know, they aren't always able to get certain types of information. You know, that's one of the things that I think should be addressed too. We have to get out of this, let's take it to the graves, you know, thought process. Yes. We don't want anybody to know, so we're just going to let the information die with us, right? And so when you have these other things like your ancestry.com, you end up with information that you would know nothing more about, you know, had you not done the process. So it's not that we don't have the information. We have to be creative and help people get creative to get it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know it's very early on your side of the world, but I really appreciate you waking up early for us, for our listeners. It means so much to us. Again, I want to, you know, emphasize that I'm so grateful that you're sharing your knowledge, your experience with us, and ways to address this really important topic. So thank you again, Nia. And I look forward to catching up with you very soon again.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
Stay tuned for our next podcast. Until then, breathe intentionally, laugh wholeheartedly, connect within, and towards people who inspire you and who bring you joy.